Welcome to our discussion on key takeaways from the Global High Yield and Leveraged Finance Conference, which just happened in Miami. My name is Sam Mazzarello, and I lead content strategy for Global Research, and I'm thrilled to be joined by two speakers today, Jake Pollock, Global Head of Credit Financing, and Stephen Dulake, Global Head of Spread Products Research. And we're going to have a discussion that covers the gamut of topics of what we heard at the conference. So, Steve, I want to start with you. We are starting a new credit-focused podcast and video series called Spread Bites.
That's right.
Give listeners and watchers a bit of a hint of what to expect.
Yeah, so each month, the idea, it might just be you and I. It might be that we invite an esteemed guest. So we have Jake with us this month. The idea is to highlight things which we think are very relevant and topical to the investor clients of the firm. And the idea is we do that within, you know, 15 to 20 minutes. This is something, as you highlighted, we will do monthly. So, you know, given that this is the first in the series, we definitely appreciate some feedback, positive or constructive, if people feel we fall short. But yeah, that's what people can look forward to each month.
Okay, fantastic. So we were all in Miami this week for the conference. Steve, tell me your high-level takeaways from the conference.
I mean, I think the high-level takeaways, at least from my perspective, in terms of general investor sentiment, I think that, nobody was sort of dancing for joy that credit offers compelling value just here. I think, you know, certainly in a spread context, people feel that spreads are very, very tight, but all in yields remain, broadly speaking, in the right zip code. So we still have this sort of tension between spreads and yields, and it's yields which continue to dominate. You know, from an investor perspective, I think there's definitely an inability for anyone to define a near-term catalyst for significant widening with a significant probability. And there's certainly a healthy respect for the technical forces at play in the markets. And, you know, by way of explaining Jake's presence, if there was one dominant or overriding theme from the conference, it really was private credit. I can't think of too many sessions, even including those away from those which were dedicated to the world of private credit and direct lending, where private credit wasn't mentioned in some shape or form.
Then one more question before we talk to Jake about private credit. Last year, there was a lot more conversation about the macro, Fed, interest rates. Was it just me, or did it seem like there was less of that this year?
Rates, the rates outlook, rates volatility will be at some point potentially very important this year. But I think definitely, you know, compared to a year ago, when there's a lot more discussion about, you know, the Fed potentially hiking to 6% or beyond, there was a lot less discussion of the macro and of the rates outlook. I guess underlying that is a view that, you know, rates have still peaked and will come down. They may come down more or less in line with what JP Morgan expects, what the market's pricing. But I think the view is that the direction of travel for policy rates at least is down and for bond yields to follow. Interestingly, what I would say is that, you know, speaking to our team of analysts, you know, it definitely feels like companies are extremely optimistic on the operating environment. So it'll be interesting to see whether that continues to be reflected in the high frequency data and this resilience that we've seen, at least in the US, is maintained.
Okay. Jake, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
You moderated the Private Credit Outlook panel, and we had Ares, HPS, and others on the panel. Lots of really good insights. Steve already mentioned it. Private credit was one of the most dominant themes throughout the conference. Tell us your takeaways, your thoughts, your insights from that panel, and what else you witnessed at the conference.
The sanguine tone throughout the conference was evident, right? And that, by the way, that should unsettle folks, right? I think it was probably, other than, you know, some of the discussions about what could go wrong, you certainly heard from companies, and I'd say even, you know, in the private credit panel, I would say in the CLO panels, there was a lot of you know, optimism that we've gotten over the hump and that the soft landing can happen. Within private credit, yeah, I think it was certainly notable that there was so much interest in the subject. You know, in that same vein, though, that in some ways that's actually not a great thing, right? If you're an investor, right, you don't really want tons of interest in an asset, which at the moment, by the way, happens to be more scarce. Deal flow generally has been lagging. Kevin Foley actually spoke about that on CNBC as well. We think it's likely to pick up throughout the year, but the dearth of deal flow, and this came up certainly in our panel as well, mixed with a lot of competition, which again gets back to how much interest there is, leads to things like lower spreads, terms that are looser than I think folks would probably prefer them to be. And that, those things combined are, really augur for some caution. So I certainly agree that there was a sanguine tone, but if you have your sort of contrarian hat on, that should give you a little bit of pause. And I think we're trying to be appropriately mindful.
Okay. Steve, you sat in on Jake's panel as well. Anything that especially resonated with you?
I thought, this is something we've discussed internally, and it was interesting that it came up on the panel. I thought, for me, one of the things that resonated was the discussion about the demand for liquidity or not in an asset class, which currently isn't so tradable. And I think one of the participants on the panel made the point that, given that there is this sort of, I wouldn't say gold rush, but there's certainly a rush to get more involved in private credit, not least when you look at the pricing differential between public and private markets. The point that was made was that those making the case or the most strongly making the case for the ability to trade the assets and some form of liquidity, are potentially those that are looking to shortcut the building up the proper origination franchise. What do you think of that? What did you think of that comment when it was made?
Look, it's interesting. I mean, obviously the participants in the market have, everyone has their own interests. I do believe that, the market has been set up in a certain way. The bulk of the capital, at least historically, and we should touch on this too, the advent of, or the increase, I should say, in retail capital that's coming in is changing what I'm about to say a little bit. But historically speaking, private credit has been really anchored by really private equity style fundraising, right? So long-term locked up capital from institutional investors historically. And so one of the really interesting things about the market is the amount of dry powder that's just sitting there, which really differentiates it from the broadly syndicated and high yield bond markets. Right. If you think about, let's take the broadly syndicated market. 2/3 of the market is owned by CLOs, right?
Yeah.
And the CLOs are permanent capital vehicles. Well, they're not permanent capital, but they're long-term capital vehicles. And they have some cash balances. But CLO creation is a factor of market demand. And right now there's a ton of demand for CLOs. And I think that's a strong thing, and that's part of why the BSL market is resurgent. The private credit market is really, again, historically buoyed by this long-term locked-up capital. So if you're sitting, and we estimate today that there's, let's call it $1.6 trillion globally of AUM in private credit, and at least $400 billion of that is in dry powder. That means there's more cash than there is assets, basically. So it's not exactly setting folks up to want to sell. There's plenty of people that want to buy. There's not a ton of people that want to sell. That's just some maybe long-winded backdrop on why, there's not a ton of demand right now to sell. But look, there's some other things that are happening. One, performance right now, again, good, soft landing, sanguine, people are pretty excited. As the market turns, that has historically led to some desire from folks to sell. Retail capital, as I mentioned a second ago, tends to be, less long-term in nature, let's call it, than institutional capital. And so if you mix those things together, it could augur for more liquidity in the future, both demand from buyers and from sellers. The third thing, in this equation is that as the market grows, lender groups are going to grow. Historically in private credit, you might have had one lender or two lenders or three lenders. Like, I can have that much trading in that kind of lender group. Compare that to a high yield bond issuance that has 150 or so, or a broadly syndicated loan that's got 150 CLOs in it. If private credit grows such that lender groups go from 3 to 30, well, 30, you can make a market with 30 investors. So that combined with You know, those other two attributes I think could create a world where liquidity is more sought after in the future.
It's interesting to hear that debate. One factoid, I guess, that didn't seem like it was being debated at all was the growth in the asset class, estimates of $2.5 to $3 trillion. I want to ask you, Jake, do you expect it to grow smoothly, or are you expecting, I guess, some degree of friction between broadly syndicated loan markets and direct lending markets?
Well, to be clear, the broadly syndicated loan market is going to continue to grow. That is my pretty strong belief. The auction mechanism that the broadly syndicated market provides should, certainly in healthy financial markets, provide the best price for borrowers. I don't think a lot of folks in the private credit market would disagree with it. Certainly, people talk about the speed, the certainty of execution that private lenders have provided. So there will be a balancing act. That $2.5 to $3 trillion number you're talking about, that's a five-year outlook. And I think Preqin sort of has put that out. I think some other sources have said that too. And look, that basically you get there with something like 10 to 15% a year growth. So, you know, if you look at the fundraising that's happening as well, and including the retail channel that has become the largest driver of AUM growth recently, it has been growing at 10 to 15%. So if you project what's been happening out, you know, mathematically, you're going to get there. So I don't think it's a crazy number. But to be clear, the broadly syndicated market's not going away. The broadly syndicated market is going to continue to grow. The broadly syndicated market, and Steve, you can certainly correct me on this. I was talking to Nelson a lot about this. Has grown historically from the last sort of 25 years at about 6% a year. And that has not been even, to your question about, you know, evenness. There's been some years where over a three-year period it's doubled, and some years where it's flatlined. You know, we kind of projected to grow something like 3 to 4% a year going forward. And I'm kind of quoting Nelson's numbers there. But that seems reasonable to me. And that, you know, if you combine that with maybe high yield growing a little bit less than that, and the credit markets growing broadly as they have in the past, private credit grows at 10% or a little bit more. That can kind of flip.
Okay, so Steve and I were talking about this earlier. I guess a corollary question to this topic is, then overall, how fungible is capital between public and private markets? And do you expect any convergence in pricing?
Yes, I do expect convergence in pricing. One of the questions that actually came up on the panel was, you know, is it, look, if you get to $3 trillion of a private credit market and the broadly syndicated market is smaller than that, then which is pricing off of which? You know, I would imagine at that point, rather than saying, well, a B3 loan is at 550, let's just say, ballpark correct. So we have, you know, 100 bips or 200 bips of premium from that in the private market. You might say, well, the private market's going to price this at 650, so the public market can get you better because we can get, you know, 500 or something. So 100. Now, by the way, that is what our you know, ours and others participants, but certainly that's what the BSL market pitches, and it's a good pitch. you should pitch best price. So, I mean, to answer your question, yeah, I think as the markets continue to grow and as players who have public sleeves and private sleeves can look across both, yeah, it would be kind of strange to me if, you know, the markets keep growing as they've grown, and 5 years from now you say, yeah, there's still 300 bips of premium for the same obligor. This one has a rating, this one doesn't. Ratings are worth something, right? Accessing the insurance markets are certainly worth something. There should be an unrated illiquidity premium, but I would imagine it's going to continue to tighten a bit. I mean, Steve, do you agree with that? We've talked about this
a lot. I mean, I think the point that I was going to pick on, which you made earlier, is the importance of the CLO market to the to the broadly syndicated loan market. So 60% of demand for broadly syndicated loans comes from CLOs. We have at the moment a very small middle market or private credit CLO market, small but growing. So we've had, I think, pretty much record CLO volumes year to date. So we've had about, in terms of gross issuance, it's about 50 billion, of which about 30 billion is net new supply, 20 billion has been refinancing. If you look at the proportion of that net new issuance, about 20% are private credit CLOs. Now, if that continues to grow, is something I'll ask you about in a second, like what's required for that growth to continue. If we continue to see that segment grow, as much as you've got retail, which may have its own interest in liquidity, you know, middle market, private credit CLOs are going to be a source or an infusion of that sticky or permanent or locked up capital, however you want to think about it. That could be a real catalyst, at least in terms of pricing convergence across the two asset classes. I mean, you're responsible for CLO origination as well. I mean, based on the conversations you're having with investors, what is it you think we need to see, or what do we need to do to see that market grow?
Well, look, first, I'm proud to say our CLO business has about 15% of that $50 billion this year. So we were the number one CLO originator globally this year, and it's been a very strong start to the year. That's, again, in line with the comment about the resurgent BSL market. Steve's right, 80% of the volume is broadly syndicated CLOs. It's also a very good point, right, that historically speaking, you would have said almost the entire thing, except for a small amount of what we would call middle market CLOs back then, almost the entire thing was BSL. Now we're saying 20% of it, right? So last year, that number was $20 billion. This year, we expect it to be $30 billion of the CLO pie in private credit CLOs. So we're very active in private credit CLOs. I do expect that to be an increasing funding source for the private credit players. The CLO market does have a lot of power over the price of the underlying asset, right? So when the CLO market is vibrant, AAA spreads come down, broadly syndicated loan prices come down. As it enters, and this probably kind of ties it all back together, it gets into your convergence point.
Yeah.
As the private credit players use this technology, the CLO technology more, right? And their AAA spreads, right, become a little bit more known and maybe liquid in the market, private credit assets can theoretically price cheaper. And then the interplay within the CLO market between the two markets is one way that the markets converge. I'm going to make one other point that just to go off on a little bit of a tangent, it sort of ties back into your secondary liquidity point. Liquidity is more than just one lens, right? I think we're all a little bit obsessed with, do the actual underlying assets trade? Like, can I make a private credit loan, you know, and then let's say there's a group of us and we trade it to some other person, right? Well, that's traditional trading. But you can also trade the back leverage, right? So you can trade the securitizations. In other words, the AAA market trades. So in the private credit market, as you have more CLOs, right, and those CLOs have cap structures themselves, those assets can trade. Right, so that's part of the ecosystem in private credit, and it very much does trade in the secondary. Unrated financing facilities can be distributed. Like we do that sometimes, right? So there's a market for private credit, not necessarily always in the underlying, but also in the securities or financing facilities, let's call them, that reference the underlying assets. I tackled a lot there. I apologize. It was sort of in
six different
directions. No, not at all.
That was an interesting and insightful tangent you took us off on. So thank you.
Yeah.
And on that note, I'm going to thank Steve and Jake for their time and insights. And I'm going to thank everyone else for tuning in. And we will see you next month.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. And stay tuned for more episodes of At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast Series. Please read the JP Morgan research reports for more information regarding its contents, as well as important disclosures. Copyright 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded March 1st, 2024.